I'm Kristen, and together we are the Empowered Caregivers. You've been listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show here on Devils Radio, and the purpose of our show is to really bring awareness to what a family caregiver is and how we need to develop a community for ourselves. Part of doing that is working with the government. It's great that the government has also been identifying these needs. And so Liza and I have been discussing and talking about the Raise Family Caregiver Act. This is a piece of legislation that has been put together with 5 primary goals and about 26 different recommendations. Liza's doing a great job recapping for us some of these goals. And so we're moving on to our 4th goal of the Raise Family Caregiver Act.
Yes, and the 4th goal is to support caregivers in future planning and emergency planning. A lot of people in the caregiver role, quite honestly, are just trying to make it through the end of the day.
Yeah. the next hour.
Right, the next hour sometimes. So there's not always that future planning in place for not only themselves and their family, but also for the person that they're providing care for. In addition to future planning, there is a recommendation to increase awareness and supports available for emergency planning.
Sure. Before we get into the emergency stuff, the personal planning, the financial stuff, I think has really impacted both of us. And that's kind of what brought us together as friends. We were doing a parent group in the Middleton Cross Plains School District to support families that had kids with disabilities. And Liza and I really gravitated towards each other because we found, first of all, she's got a great sense of humor. So I found her perspective on everything really helpful to keep it light. But we also had made decisions that impacted our own employment and our own professional path. Liza, you want to speak to that for yourself?
Sure. When my son was first diagnosed at age 3, the recommendation for therapy at that time was ABA therapy, which is an intensive therapy where people come into the home and work with him one-on-one. And for the greatest outcome at that time, it was recommended that he did 32 hours a week.
32 hours. That is a full-time job.
Yeah. For a 3-year-old.
Yeah.
Of ABA therapy. So how do I work?
Right.
You know, so I didn't. I just pieced things together for some supplemental income. And I think a lot of people end up doing that.
Yeah, that's what ended up in our household. In our household, excuse me, for my husband. I'm a teacher by trade, as I've said, and so I was the one with the better benefits. And I wanted to stay a part-time teacher, but unfortunately that wasn't going to sustain us because somebody needed to be able to, on the fly, respond when Nicole had a seizure or when she had this set of appointments or these set of therapies. And so we needed a flexible position, you know, a flexible job, and that was Stefan. And so he had to leave the company he was working with and start his own business, like you're saying, and kind of piece things together. This isn't the path either one of us thought that we were going to have financially or professionally, but it's the one that we're working with. And for the most part, things have been good. But, you know, it's definitely put some limitations on some of the things that we've wanted to do earlier in our life.
Yeah, and there's some statistics out there that indicate 45% of all caregivers report that caregiving has affected their personal finances. 19% have left bills unpaid or paid them late, while another 15% had to borrow money from family and friends.
Right.
So it definitely can put a strain. And then in addition to the costs for the care recipient, a 2016 caregiving cost study conducted by AARP found that caregivers spend approximately $7,000 a year of their own money.
Yeah. That's a lot. And I think that helps since it's from the AARP, keep reminding us that this is people that are in all different stages of their life, right? So that $7,000 that's coming out of a caregiver's pocket is probably coming out of either the spouse's pocket or in lots of cases, probably the adult children who are taking care of their aging parent.
Right. Yeah. And while families spend about 14% of their income on caregiving, it's disproportionately impacts Black and Hispanic families. Like I said, for white families, it's an average of 14% of their income is spent on caregiving, whereas in the Latino community, studies show that it's closer to 44% of their income is spent on caregiving. And in the African American community, spends approximately 34% of their income on caregiving.
Yeah. And so you can just see how this has got some kind of major impacts and ripple effects on families, on people. I always am going to go back to disproportionately women as mothers and daughters. And, you know, it's taking away a lot of earning power, which, again, why should the general community care about this? Because that money could be money that's better spent out into the economy, right? And keeping different things afloat and keeping businesses growing and thriving. And I do think many of us have said this, that one of the benefits of, not one of the benefits, one of the things that has come to light in the pandemic and the shutdown is that people can work from home more. There is more flexibility. And I know when I've talked with family caregivers about what do you wish your employer understood or did for you as a caregiver more, and they say flexibility, 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 right? So flexibility around hours, flexibility around working from home. And if you have that, you can stay with the person that you're caring for, and that doesn't become this extra challenge of trying to figure out how to balance things or how to fit things in.
Yeah, that's right. And one thing that was part of the Build Back Better bill that the RAISE Council indicated was having paid family leave.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. Well, I'm definitely someone who's benefited from that personally, so I really appreciate that and know that it's what's kept our family in the middle class, you know, and not dipping down. So a lot of things to keep in mind here in regards to the economic impact for, you know, our whole economy, as well as the individuals themselves. I'd cut Liza off because she had said that this, you know, goal also got into how we need to think about emergency services. But before we went into that, I wanted to make sure she was really clear for the listeners about what are the financial and economic impacts. So from a safety standpoint, this was really interesting when you started teaching me about some of the stuff that you had found in your research. It's challenging, isn't it, when there's an emergency in terms of either like a fire or a natural disaster, for people to recognize and think about what they're going to do for the people that they're caring for. And so I was asking Liza, and we haven't gotten to that point yet, but and maybe when we open up the phones in a couple weeks, some of you might have some insight on what does the American Red Cross do? What when we're talking about the California wildfires, when we're talking about earthquakes, when we're talking about tornadoes in our neck of the woods, what's being done in their response? So what's being done in their preparation for their responses when they're coming into a community where they know they've got people with Alzheimer's, people with autism, people in wheelchairs? You know, it's just really interesting to me that I'm hoping somebody's thinking about it.
Right. And I remember doing some coursework with parents in regards to planning before something happens, you know, reaching out to the police department, reaching out to the fire department. If you have a person with a disability that maybe is not going to be reacting well to this crisis situation, not that anyone reacts well, but, you know, just that the police can get to know them and get to know their situation and get to know their needs.
It was a real wake-up call to me when Nicole was in kindergarten and there was a fire drill, and people with autism oftentimes have sensory issues, and Nicole has really strong sensory issues. So she walks around with noise reduction headphones 24/7. And when there was a fire drill, she was really revved up, and the firemen were coming because it was kindergarten. And I was there to kind of help troubleshoot with the teachers. And she, you know, looked at them and all of their, you know, uniforms and their machinery and stuff, and was really freaked out. And he said to me, do not make her more intimidated, right? I want her to see me like this and know that I'm safe, because if she's in a fire, we want her to come towards me, not away from me. And I'm like, oh, that's such a great point. I mean, that's true for all little kids, right?
Right.
But in terms of people that have some extra challenges like sensory stuff, it's really was an important part of emergency prep with Nicole.
Yes. Yeah. And there are things out there that can be done, because I, you know, kind of go back and forth. How do you prepare for emerge, you know, it's what can you do, really? Right. But there are a lot of resources. So we are going to dig into that a little bit down the road. So people do have systems in place.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Well, and it's interesting that, you know, this kind of smoothly transitions into the fifth goal of the Raise Family Caregiver Act and the last goal that we want to go over, which is the idea that we need to be researching people who are going through these circumstances now. As we talked about earlier, this is a new experience for folks. We've always had people that needed extra support, but it was different because people were on farms. People were not living as long. People didn't have the technology that we have today. So we've got a whole new world of people that are getting support, needing support, and we need to be researching them in order to make sure that we're figuring out what are the best practices.
Yes, that's right. And like I had mentioned earlier, across government agencies, there has been even different definitions of caregiver. So just getting to know step one by defining the caregiver role and how can we support caregivers against throughout different ages, cultures, so on and so forth.
Yeah. And so we're really lucky here in Madison to have the University of Wisconsin and the Wiseman Center. I know my family's been involved in a couple different studies with them, and I think we'll continue to be, because what they're recognizing is that, again, they have to get this data and they have to start getting evidence-based best practices. What's working for the families, what's working for the family caregivers, and what's not, so that we can continue to support with funding the proper things.
Right. And not only what's working for them as far as their day-to-day needs, but also their own personal health. And that's mm-hmm. another area that we're going to Absolutely. Dive into at some point, just some of the personal detriments that can happen from being a family caregiver and what we can do to prevent that.
Yeah, exactly. So we've really kind of recapped for you some of our goals with the Raise Family Caregiver Act and how we want that to kind of direct our programming. And we're going to do more than a radio show. We think the radio show is really important as a vehicle to put the microphone. I love that expression. Liza used it, to put the microphone out there to the community and to build our community. But we also know that we need to do other types of things to get a community going, right? And as I was saying to Liza when we were talking about this stuff, we have to recognize our identity as a caregiver before we can actually create this community as a caregiver. So we're going to be providing programming with workshops, retreats, downloadable lessons on understanding what it means to be a family caregiver and how you can support yourself and connect with other people. When we come back in just a moment, we'll talk about a few more ways that we want to build our community. You've been listening to The Empowered Caregiver with Kristen
and Liza,
and we'll be back in just a moment.